Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
At the beginning of 2016, I imagine few would have written the headline for the coming year, "Evangelicals Support Donald Trump's Bid for the Presidency." Maybe a few, but very few would have written that headline. You never know what's going to happen. And now with the Donald Trump presidency being a reality, you really don't know what's going to happen. What will the top religion stories of 2017 be? Those headlines have yet to be written, but maybe there's a theme that has already emerged that will be part of those stories. We're going to be talking about it with Terry Mattingly on this Thursday afternoon, January the 5th. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Our conversation with Terry will go into Hour 2 of Issues Etc. And then Christ in the Old Testament will be in Psalm 29 with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer. Terry Mattingly is a regular guest. He's Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He is author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and of the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here.
We're going to be talking a lot about religious freedom as a religion angle in the news for 2017. When the average member of the media hears that term, religious freedom, how do they define it? What do they hear?
Well, the cynical interpretation of that question is that they only hear religious liberty as a buzzword being used to defend efforts to oppress LGBTQ people, Muslims, and other liberal causes, such as rolling back protections on abortion. So thus, that's why, as you and I have discussed many times, religious liberty is now, even though that's a perfectly acceptable First Amendment term, you now regularly see that in news reports inside quotation marks. I think the best way for listeners to think about this is to flash back to kind of the beginning of the LGBT sexual revolution legal battles, where basically if you were listening to certain religious broadcasters who we will leave unnamed, but everybody just think of the old guard. If you were listening to religious broadcasters, every single initial protection for LGBTQ people was seen as an apocalyptic event that ended the world. And pointed toward the need for absolute control of the Supreme Court, et cetera, et cetera. Now, we don't want to get into discussions here of the slippery slope concept and whether or not, to some degree, some of those conservatives were right. That's not my point. My point is that for them, any change in the existing regime was catastrophic. I think it's important now to see that after the Trump election, for the left, the shoe, that's the exact shoe that is now on their foot, which means you can expect in the elite media of America, which on those issues function at times, frankly, as public relations agencies, you can expect any tweaking of the current sexual revolution legal regime to be viewed as apocalyptic. And the end, I mean, so thus you have Rachel Maddow saying, you know, that, did she say the other day that she thought there was a possibility Trump would end up sending people like her to concentration camps? I mean, that's kind of flaming rhetoric. I saw that go by on Twitter. Maybe I should have checked that quote out more precisely, but I think you can imagine that that's the attitude or the mood among many people. So at this point, you and I get to say that we've been talking about this now how long? Several years? You know, that religious liberty was the coming story. And I've been saying it to one degree or another at Get Religion for 13 years and in columns for coming up on a third of a century, or at least 30 years. So my point here is that religious liberty is clearly still the subject of 2017. for religion news. But what we don't know is what the headlines will be. I remain interested in one issue more than anything else, and that is compromise even possible? And would an attempt to compromise be seen in the media as a catastrophic loss for the left? Let's flash back for a second. You remember months ago, I wrote a post about Kim Davis, the embattled clerk in Kentucky. And I mentioned the fact that in the state of Kentucky, there was a coalition of Republicans and Democrats, I stress, and Democrats, who were trying to find a way to grant a kind of freedom of conscience or conscientious objection status to a small number of Kentucky government officials who didn't feel they could endorse same-sex marriage. Well, this led to a bunch of coverage, which in the national press was, I think the word catastrophic applies. But the new governor came into power, and one of his first actions was to simply take the line off the marriage certificate in Kentucky that the county clerk had to sign, and made it to where any relevant government official in that process could sign it. And also, this legislation, backed by Republicans and Democrats, immediately made it possible for gay and lesbian couples to be married all across Kentucky if they had some sort of conflict in one county. They were to be immediately referred to another, you know, if there wasn't some other official in that county who could sign it. This was hailed in the press as a massive defeat for the gay rights clause and a tremendous victory for the religious right. Well, in that time, I had a brief conversation with a veteran and very solid religion reporter, and we were discussing the word compromise. And this other reporter questioned my use of the word compromise, and I said I thought the compromise was appropriate because, A, it was legislation drafted by a compromise committee of Republicans and Democrats. B, it protected the chief aim of people on both sides. It protected an absolute freedom to gay marriage in the state of Kentucky in every single county, a major victory for the gay rights cause. But at the same time, it offered a conscientious objection or conflict of interest status to a small number of clerks who didn't feel they could sign that marriage certificate as required by law at that time, and simultaneously made it where a lot of other people could sign it. I said, if that wasn't a compromise, what was? And the reporter's comment is where I'd like to end in answering your initial question. The reporter said the press is not going to see that as a compromise if Kim Davis is happy. In other words, anything that grants any victory to cultural conservatives, whether they're Republicans or Democrats, anything that grants victory to a cultural conservative is not a compromise. And if that continues to be the attitude of the press going into the next year, then what I think could be the big story of 2017, which would be attempts to compromise on some of these issues, may never even have a chance of developing, you know, if that's how they're kind of greeted in the public square.
It is absolute victory or nothing when it comes to the left here.
Yet the religious left, the secular left, the cultural left right now, this probably would insult people, and it probably should, they're acting exactly like Pat Robertson, only in reverse. I mean, if you could take everything Pat Robertson ever said about gay rights, religious liberty, etc., and if you flipped it completely around, that seems to be the stance of the cultural left. And unfortunately, that includes many of the most powerful institutions within our mainstream press.
More with Terry Mattingly on religious liberty in 2017, right after this.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Terry Mattingly is our guest on this Thursday afternoon, January the 5th. We're talking about the top religious theme in the media for 2017, doubtless religious liberty. Terry, we're talking about a piece from the Washington Post from Sarah Pulliam Bailey. You know who she is. And she talks about one of the possible events in 2017 is the energizing of the religious left. Is that plausible? It just doesn't seem that the religious left is a very effective political force.
Well, frankly, I disagree.
Okay.
But let me put it in a different framework. If in substitute for the word religious left, and instead of looking at the whole country, substitute the coalition of atheist, agnostic, religiously unaffiliated ethnic churches and the old mainline Protestant religious left. That coalition is now the largest, overwhelmingly, the dominant coalition of the Democratic Party. So at the very least, you would have to say the religious left continues to rise as a force within the Democratic Party, which makes it automatically a crucial element of American public life, and justifiably so. Second, you would have to say that as long as the Supreme Court is made up completely of people from Harvard and Yale, you would have to say that the attitudes of that coalition will continue to at least frame the issues at the Supreme Court until there is such change in membership that there are other voices present. Agreed? Third, that coalition represents the dominant framing attitude of the journalist who put the term religious liberty inside quotation marks instead of using it as the frankly traditional liberal term that it is from previous generations of strong First Amendment advocates who wanted to protect the first liberty of religious liberty along with freedom of the press, freedom of association, freedom of speech, etc. So at the very least, the religious left can continue to rise because when under threat, people always respond. You know that nothing is better for conservative fundraising than a massive victory by the left. So nothing is better for liberal fundraising than what is perceived as a strong victory for the right. So I want to disagree with you there and say Sarah's onto something. And I think what she's talking about when she says that is the generational trends toward the religiously unaffiliated and the nuns, N-O-N-E-S, on issues of sexuality, morality, etc., and the growing divide between urban and red zip code America, this increasing polarization that we're seeing. There's no reason to see that letting up in any way, at least not that I see.
Some other questions that Bailey asks in her Washington Post piece. Will legislators renew efforts to pass anti-Sharia laws concerned about the growing influence of Islam in America? What do you think the answer to that question is for 2017?
I think we're going to have to see what happens involving such laws. But let me put it this way. One of the most fascinating events of this last year occurred at the Southern Baptist Convention. And I think everybody would agree the Southern Baptist Convention remains a bellwether institution of cultural conservatism in the United States. And there was a resolution being debated on the floor about religious liberty, and someone on the floor brought up the issue of the mosques, singular or plural, in the Nashville area, and wanted the resolution tweaked in some way to express opposition to the free and easy building of mosques in America. And Russell Moore, the outspoken leader of the Southern Baptist Convention as a representative or an authoritative voice, or an interpretive voice at least, in Washington, D.C., Russell Moore said, no, religious liberty has to be for anybody. And when you see governments in the Bible Belt trying to prevent the construction of mosques, you should know that immediately we're going to see efforts in San Francisco and Chicago and elsewhere to prevent the building of Southern Baptist congregations and other institutions that represent traditional Christian points of view. He said religious liberty is for everybody. That doesn't mean we have to agree with them, but it means we must be truly tolerant and support their right to their beliefs. Now, there was a massive surge of applause, and that amendment, attempt to strengthen that amendment to oppose the building of mosques, etc., just died on the floor immediately at that point at the Southern Baptist Convention. So I think there are a lot more religious people who understand that religious liberty applies to all kinds of religious groups, not just to themselves. I think a lot of people understand that, far more than the press knows that they do. So I'm going to withdraw on that and say we're going to have to see what the issues are. Now, if you had a case come up, let's say involving an honor killing, and some young Muslim girls are killed by their parents or extended family because they attempted to convert to Christianity, or they attempted to date or marry non-Muslim boys or something. If you had a case like that come up and legislation grew up to say that honor killings would be prosecuted as hate crimes, as religious hate crimes, I don't know how the debate on that kind of issue would go. I don't know how that will be worded. I don't even know completely what the relevant applicable laws would be. So I can understand where this is coming from, but I think there are far, I think there actually is a coalition. We see it. I wrote a column about it not long ago about prisons. The coalition of people defending the rights of Muslim prisoners has run from the far right to the far left. Everybody knows what religious liberty means when it comes to defending the rights of Muslim prisoners. And I think that coalition would continue to hold on issues of religious minorities, even though that coalition has splintered on issues involving sexual liberty. Does that make any sense?
With the possible changing of the complexion of the high court, and then, of course, the federal courts are extensive system, do you think that the concerns that many people have about kind of the basic religious liberties, the baker, now that the now proverbial
right
wedding photographer, do you think that those are going to lessen over the next year and the following years, Terry?
Well, the first appointment to the court is not the key. It's whether or not there are any other openings after that. If you think there is angst over the discussions of Trump appointing the successor to Justice Scalia, wait until it's Trump perhaps appointing a successor to Ginsburg or Kennedy, the man who effectively has served as the king and ruling authority of American life for a decade and a half as that crucial 5-4 swing vote. So the court is the court. It's crucial. It's huge. It's going to be the big story of the year, but we have to see what happens and when, and we have to see who he names. I think one of the things that people are still kind of hesitant about going into 2017 is I don't think anybody really knows what Trump will do. And a lot of people who voted for Trump, a lot of conservative evangelicals, Catholics, Orthodox Jews, etc., who voted for Trump, they're not sure what he would do. As we've said all along, the issue is that they were sure what Clinton would do. So they chose uncertainty as better than knowing that, you know, that fate would be against them.
Finally, with only about 30 seconds, from your seat, do you think that a President Trump understands religious liberty sufficiently to do what a president has to do to calm the concerns that many have had about their liberty in that venue?
He doesn't, but Pence does. The vice president does. A lot depends on what kind of role Pence actually plays in the administration. But I'll go ahead and make a prediction here. My prediction for 2017 is what's really crucial is whether mainstream business and organizations such as the NCAA, the major television networks, et cetera, whether they continue the work of shaming the opponents of LGBTQ expansion of their rights and shaming the people who attempt to seek compromises on religious liberty cases, trying to find someplace in the middle. Separate from government, we should never forget the percentage of the public square that depends on the massive, on the Googles and Apples and Ford and Walmarts and Targets of this world. Maybe the fact that the government angle is so uncertain, we should pay more attention right now to the public square in terms of the companies and industries. Maybe that's where the action is going to go this year.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here.
This list of subjects, male and female sex differences, transgenderism, homosexuality, sex education, contraception. Think about those things, marriage in general. Those are the kind of subjects that trigger a lot of the conversation we have about religious liberty in our society. They are also the subjects and the content of the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January, Ethics of Sex, From Taboo to Delight. You can find it at our website, issuesetc.org. It's on every page of the website, issuesetc.org. Or call Concordia Publishing House and order the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January, Ethics of Sex, From Taboo to Delight. Their toll-free number, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. On the other side of the break, it's our series, Christ in the Old Testament. We'll be in Psalm 29, Ascribe to the Lord Glory. Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer will be our guest.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Male and female sex differences, contraception, transgenderism. These are some of the topics covered in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January, Ethics of Sex, From Taboo to Delight. You can find out more at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Ethics of Sex contributors include Issues Etc. guests Ben Mays, Tom Eckstein, and Richard Stuckwish. Ethics of Sex, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January.
Others talk. We have something to say. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Tired of hearing about what you have to do for God? Then come hear what He has done for you. Receive His gifts of life and salvation through the cross of Jesus Christ. If you think big screens belong in movie theaters, then you'll be right at home at Faith Lutheran Church in Beaufort, South Carolina. God's powerful, saving word needs no gimmicks, so we simply teach the word of God and administer His sacraments. We plant and water while God gives the growth. Faith Lutheran Church of Beaufort, South Carolina, where the Bible is still the word of God and where we still speak the historic Christian liturgy. This is your grandfather's church. Come home.
Christians, young and old, are increasingly pressured to change their beliefs. That's why St. Jude said we need to contend for the faith once for all delivered to the saints. At the San Antonio Worldview Conference, Confessional Lutherans Jonathan Fisk, Jay Weber, Ryan McPherson, and Craig Parton will unmask the false, direct us to Christ and His Word, and defend the faith. The San Antonio Worldview Conference, Saturday, February the 11th, San Antonio, Texas. Visit worldusa.org. worldusa.org.